You're listening to the Big Cast Network.
You know what I really like doing? I like going to conferences. You know why I like going to conferences? It's not always about the content. I really like seeing everyone. I learn more from sitting around the table and talking to my peers than I ever would from staying in the four walls of my office. That's one of the reasons why we developed the AXFI conference. AXFI stands for Analytics by Financial Innovation. This year, our keynote speaker is Eric Berlow. He's a TED Senior Fellow known for talking about simplifying complex systems. We also have Chuck Davison. He's the head of customer engagement for CardFree. He's a frequent speaker on this show. And more importantly, he was one of the original developers of the Starbucks mobile payment app, one of the most successful mobile payment apps in the world. We also have Janet Estep, who is the president and CEO of Nacha. We have Neff Hudson from USAA, the Vice President of Corporate Development, and John Janklius, the CEO of Partners Federal Credit Union, who has written a book called Doing What Matters, How Leaders Help Individuals and Organizations Thrive, and he's the founder of the CEOcorner.com. It's huge stuff. Amazing things are going to happen. So if you want to check it out, just go to axficonference.com, and in the right-hand corner, it says Register for 2017. Secure your spot. Also, if you put in BigCast for the promo code, you'll get 10% off. Can't wait to see you there.
Hello and welcome to BigCast Network. I'm Ann Legg, founder of Thrive, and your host, bringing you all sorts of interesting conversations about business, the who, the why, the how, and most often, the what have you. I have a very special guest today. My guest is John Janklius. He's currently the CEO of Partners Federal Credit Union, which is part of the Walt Disney Company, if you will. He'll go into that in a moment. He's also the founder of the CEO Corner and the author of a great book called Doing What Matters. He's a passionate leadership expert. I'm going to talk about that as well. I'm really excited to welcome John. Hey, John.
Hey, Ann. How are you? Glad to be here.
Good. Okay, so let's start off with a little bit about telling us about your credit union and kind of your current role, how long you've been there. Give us a little context to that, if you will, please.
Oh, sure. So the 60-second interview would be, let's see, John Janklius, 30 years financial services, U.S. Federal Bank. Then made my way over to Lockheed, or now called Logix, before coming here to Partners Federal Credit Union. I've been here now for 12 years.
Fantastic.
And a little bit about credit union. As you mentioned, we do serve the Walt Disney Company. So that's everything that's underneath that umbrella, from Pixar to Lucas Entertainment to Marvel to ESPN. So there's a lot to know, and it's a real privilege to serve all the cast members and their families here. And so we're about $1.5 billion in assets and serving about 140,000 members right now. So, and I do that along with all my teammates here, cast members, which we call them. And there's about 400 of us here working.
So let me make sure I've got a good picture on this, which quite, as you can imagine, is quite colorful. I'm thinking Walt Disney. I am thinking of both Anaheim and Orlando. And I'm thinking of all points in between. Is that about right?
You're right. So probably about 80% of all of our opportunities are split between Orlando and Southern California, for the reasons that you would imagine, the studios in California and Disneyland, and then also in Florida, Walt Disney World, which is just a behemoth of a place and full of opportunity there. But there are other locations that we do serve, the Alani in Hawaii. ESPN takes us up to New York and Connecticut areas, and ABC TV, and up to the Bay Area for Pixar. And so, yeah, the remaining 10% of our opportunities are outside of those two footprints.
That's fantastic. So with your experience in the financial space, this group of fabulous members that you get to lead and take care of, they sound very different. I mean, for obvious reasons, but how different are they in your experience?
Well, really different. So think about national average. I think the average age for somebody at a credit union is 47. Our age here is 37, so we skew a little bit younger. The cast members that we serve at the studio are professionals or entertainment people, compared to the parks, which are everything from hotels and hospitality to running parks to Walt Disney Imagineering, which is a lot of engineering. So we run the gamut in age and demographics and professional experience and life experience. We've got a lot of young members who are just getting started, so we're part of that journey for them.
Okay, so that is actually a perfect setup into transformational leadership. Now, that to me is just a beautiful word, transformational leadership. I mean, you know, I'm not going to nerd out and diagram that, but Can you explain that for me? And at some point, I definitely want to talk about Teddy and Teresa.
Absolutely. So first thing we need to get out of the way is I am not an expert, but I am a serious student. And so I'll start with kind of some general observations and then more specific or related to leadership and specifically transformational leadership. But, you know, at the highest level, I think we'd all agree leadership matters. And we can see that in organizations that are really thriving and doing well. So if leadership matters, why is that? Because it drives culture. And we know culture is what really gets results.
Right.
And that culture can either form intentionally or it just kind of grows organically. And that can be okay as long as that culture really drives your mission and it serves you well. So the other observation I have is that it seems like organizations and cultures are evolving quite a bit, and that's just due to the market forces, the amount of disruption that's out there, the cycle times that seem to be changing. So organizations, strategies, cultures are under stress. So it's a good time to step back and think about intentionally what we want to do. And that's what kind of brought me along the way to think about, you know, I think it's actually transformational leadership that's going to help our credit union most. So when you think about that, I sometimes think in diagrams. I'm very much a picture-driven guy. You know, if you looked at my journal, it would just be full of pictures. So let me draw. So, but, you know, I think we think traditionally about organizations in diagrams, and we think of triangles and hierarchies. And, you know, if we think back to the industrial age, we think of command and control types of leadership structures, or what they call transactional forms of leadership. And that made a lot of sense when one person at the top, I call that the me, you know, guided the many we at the bottom, because it was really about machines and people were almost seen as parts of machinery to make factories work. And then as we've become, steam engines and electrified, we had a lot of knowledge workers to make that happen. And you see the transformation in the structures. And so we started to move to more dynamic forms of leadership. Some popular ones are called servant leadership or transformational leadership. And when I think about those two, and that's funny, we were just having this conversation in my staff meeting, the difference between those two and contrasting them. For the most part, those dynamic forms of leadership are very complementary to one another. I mean, they get after things like trust, empowerment, teach, listen, communicate. These are some of the things that are just central to both of those leadership styles. But you can differentiate them a bit. So when I think of servant leadership, I think of a leader like Mother Teresa, where the focus was on people and elevating people's stations in life. And that's what her work was about. When I think, by contrast, transformational leadership, I think of Teddy Roosevelt trying to lift us out of a recession, or Martin Luther King, you know, out of segregation, or who else, Mandela, taking us out of apartheid. So they were mission-driven leaders. And so when I think about that, that really parallels what we're trying to do here at the credit union. Our mission is to make all financial dreams come true. That mission-driven piece first, I think, really helps to center us on what we're trying to do. And then we know right after the mission comes people, process, and technology. And for us, we say people are first in the order of those things. And so, you know, that's kind of the thought process about being intentional about what we're trying to do when we say transformational leadership here at the credit union. So,
That was really helpful. And especially when you explained the Teddy versus the Teresa, leadership is so fluid, and there's, you know, many different environments, especially the ones we've recently have gone through. They ask for different demands. In a transformational leadership, is it truly fluid? I mean, do you kind of keep morphing, and maybe sometimes you need a little servant, or you go back to training. How does that stay? It seems so loose. Is there firm parts about it?
There are some enduring things about it. And thank God, right, that there's some things that we can come back to again and again that are kind of guiding principles. And one for me is just differentiating between management and leadership, because sometimes we use those interchangeably. So real quickly, I think of management as kind of the science of variation out of a system, where I think about leadership is directional. It's quantum, incremental. And when I think about leadership, some of the things that are enduring is that journey is best traveled inside out. First, you need to understand what's going on inside of your own head before you try to guide others and, you know, into a joint effort. So I think it's an inside out process would be a guiding principle.
Okay.
The other thing, it's directional, right? Yep. Rather than trying to be so precise. The other thing is you can't be leading all the time. Once you decide direction, then you do need to fall back on management to make that dream or that vision happen, or else they're just kind of fantasies. So this idea of, management and leadership are two things. It's kind of like inhaling and exhaling. These two things go together very well. Mm-hmm. And leadership is used in small doses, and it's followed through by, you know, management. And that's best traveled kind of as inside out experience. And so there's a lot to learn about that. And there's coaches that can help us with that, and science.
So tell me a little bit about the transformation that you've had the wonderful opportunity of experiencing, specifically within your organization.
Yeah, so our organizational journey started with my own personal one. I went to a place called the Center for Creative Leadership in Colorado Springs. They have a program there called Leadership at the Peak. You spend a week there and you go through this whole immersion process of leadership and learning about yourself and your impact on others and opportunities to do better. I was so moved by that experience, Anne, that I thought, you know what, I've got to get this to my leaders. And I can't send one person at a time to Leadership at the Peak. There's some qualifying things, and it was very expensive. So I found one of the faculty members there to build a program in-house here. And so it was not only me, but all my direct reports. And then I thought, after a year, you know, what the heck? All 50 leaders should do this. Mm-hmm. And so that program was then offered to all 50. And then I got to thinking in this last year, what the heck? All 400 of us need this. We need a common language. We're all on this journey together. So that's what we're doing. We're having an in-house leadership program that has trickled down, starting with me, all the way to all 400 of us now going through leadership training.
What are some of the neat things that you've seen, especially within that? I'm sure there had been a lot of really neat light bulbs that just went off in that division between, you know, management and leadership. Because like you said, there's going to be moments where you realize, I don't need to manage this. I need to lead this. What can you give me some examples or some things that you found that were just, you know, fantastic? Or maybe not fantastic, maybe some of the challenges.
Well, I mean, there are certainly challenges. You know, part of it is people thinking about, do I really need to do this work? Do I want to do this work, this inside journey? Because it is that. It's a lot of self-reflection and thinking about your impact on others and then having to communicate that others and dialogue about that stuff. And that can feel a little uncomfortable. But I tell you what, the benefits on the other side of that, once you get that synergy going, is really good. And simultaneous of doing this leadership training, I started tracking our progress against two independent indexes. I don't know if you've heard of Radin Financial Group's index, so their performance index, and also the return of the member score. And we watched our scores, Ann, go from the mid-level, you know, 60th percentile, to be in the perennial top 10% in both of those indexes over a 10-year period. So this work, I think, was part of the secret sauce and kind of getting us going, is getting people thinking about this is not just a job, I'm on a mission, that this job is personally to me a way to get better. And there's a lot in that for me personally. And that just kind of releases a lot of energy in the organization, and that drives performance.
Then did you know, have you also looked at like the satisfaction scores as well? I mean, that's part of what the return on member does, but is satisfaction, employee engagement, are those some of the other areas that you've been able to track as well?
They are. So, you know, for example, when I got here, the mission was to grow assets, to double them in 5 to 7 years, and we doubled them in 3 years. We grew 40,000 members to 140,000. Your question about NPS or MSAT, it was hovering around 75, 76. Now it's around 90. Our capital position strong is at, you know, 12%. And we've been able to expand a lot of services and touch points for members too at the same time while we're growing. So those are kind of the mission results, you know, for the organization. But I've also seen some incredible transformations for individuals. You know, we've had a lot of folks leave here, and based on wanting to have their own personal ambition is to lead their own organizations. You know, for example, we had Bill Parton leave recently and become the CEO at SharonView, and they're $1.5 billion. Frank Wasson over at First Entertainment, they're $1.4 billion in assets. Jim Cash went on to become the CEO at the Darden, is now a consultant in the space. And we just have many examples of folks like that who've left here. We call graduated. You're part of the alumni club now, you know? You know, make your contribution and making the, you know, your dreams come true. So,
right. Now, I bet there's a really cool logo. I'm just thinking, with the talent you have, there's got to be a very cool logo with that.
And a handshake. There's a secret handshake that goes with it.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this, what's so neat is, you know, in the credit union space, you don't really hear leadership discussed in these ways, but it seems so very natural because the credit unions are founded on missions and helping, you know, people helping people. And it seems like such a nice fit. Was this part of your reason to, I want to get to your book because it's such a great conversation about this. Was this part of the reason why you started the CEO Corner? Are those two connected?
They are. Yeah. So part of it was just doing reflection on the journey here at Partners. And I did it on the 10-year anniversary, and I was thinking, man, what have I learned so that I can do better the next 10 years was kind of the exercise. And I think, you know, I'm a big journaler, right? So I went to my stack of journals, and there were about 40 of them sitting there. And sure enough, there was a lot of good learning there. And some of it pointed to just this idea, if you wanted to go from point A to point B, what have I learned about that? Are there some principles? And there are things that matter. And that's what the book is called, Doing What Matters. It's how individuals and organizations find their way to success. And it's a process. There's tools. There's something I call a learning loop. There's five questions that you can ask and answer, and it'll help you on your way. And it's based on principles that are not John Janclay's. They're based on stuff by Peter Drucker and different consulting firms that I work with and other smart people that I've worked with. And so kind of putting that all together, that's what the book's about. It's about, you know, if I could play it back to myself, then I think I could own it and learn it better. And that was the effort.
I think, and let's just give our audience a little bit about the book, and let me just give my spin, and then please add or subtract from that spin, if you will. I love reading about business. I love reading about strategy. I love reading about just about anything as to I have something and I bring it to market. I just think it's a fascinating subject matter, clearly, but what I think I found really interesting about your book was a couple of things. First of all, it was really a very lovely narrative. And let me be clear on that. Many times when you're reading a subject matter book, it doesn't come into, there's a story behind it. It is told as case study, you know, learning points, very academic. And yours is told as a gorgeous narrative story. And because that, it made it a really easy and delightful read. Again, two things that you don't find. So, number one, I kind of have a question about that, but let me finish up. The other thing I really enjoyed was you put in pieces that were super easy to use. So you did have that academic point. I walked away, as I would with any read, and say, okay, here's the things I'm going to do, and here are the action items. But it was very easy because you had put that all together for me. Tell me a little bit about how you, the structure of the book. I know that's a nerdy question, but it is a very different approach. Why did you choose a narrative? And also, were you also thinking of it as an academic output and that there would be learner objectives and you'd be trying to, you know, meet an academic goal when you're putting it together?
Well, thank you for noticing the different pieces in it. And it was a conscious choice. For me, I just like to digest things through stories because it's concepts in action, right? It's not knowledge, it's knowledge applied. So in addition to the knowledge that I think that I gathered over 10 years, if I could tell that in a story and you could see the different characters, then, you know, you could see it in action, what the culture would look like. What would the CEO be doing? What would the sales manager be doing? What would the operations be doing in order to help this leader in the story? Just kind of backing up, the story is a business fable, and it's about a leader who is young and emerging and having so much success, and then all of a sudden it just stalls and he cannot figure out what is going on. And the whole organization, the CEO, his sales manager, the people around him saying, hey, come over here. Let us show you a tool that we use. It's called the learning loop. Five questions that you can ask and answer. And together we'll do the work and we'll figure out how to get you back on the path to success. And so that's what the story is about. And it ends with an assessment that you can do on the principles as a summary. And then you can kind of gauge yourself. And, you know, there's a saying that learning is remembering. And I really believe that when you read the book, and you can do it in about 2 hours, it's a fast read. You'll get to the end, you'll do the assessment, and you'll go, I know all of this, except for this item number 3 here, I could do better on that. And then like, that's perfect. You got it. That's the message.
So thank you for giving the background about the story. And one of the things I did wonder as I was reading it was, I wonder, first of all, why can't I work for that organization? That's just awesome. Like, what a great story. That's because I own my own company and I get to do that with me. Okay, well, there we go. But the other thought I had is, what if I don't get to work for such a beautiful organization like that? And the story you tell is not perfect. It's not, you know, unicorns and roses. You tell a very good story. But what if I am somebody who may not be the senior leader, but I connect with what you've told me and I love how I know I can make a change? What kind of advice would you give to somebody who isn't in a position to be the leader, but who wants to make the change and can definitely see how within their area of responsibility could do that?
Yeah, so I like that question a lot. And so back to the top of our conversation, if leadership is an inside out experience, then start with you, right? Even if you're not a formal leader, what do you do? Where do you want to go? So using this process to figure that out, and then you start moving and going, there's nothing like success for other people to see that and saying, hey, what are you doing? And then soon you'll be invited and saying, hey, will you help a group of us do that? And basically, that's been the arc of my leadership career, is I've just been trying to learn and grow and help others come with me when I do it. And that's just a very powerful place. But it all starts with the locus of control, just being it's you. What do you want to do? What are you about? Yeah.
You also touch a little bit on what is your why. You don't directly say the Simon Sinek point, but you do talk about your why. So how would you answer the question, John? What is your why?
Yeah, my why is building environments for myself and others to thrive. I'm willing to take risk to do that.
Okay, what's the biggest risk you've taken?
Oh, gosh. Probably professionally is leaving the nest, right? To say I am ready to go and lead an organization. Sure, there's a lot more I'd like to know, but I've learned enough and I'm ready. So let me see if I can lead an organization. I think that was a big one.
That does sound like a big one. I think a lot of people would agree that might be a big one, especially this big one.
Well, the other one was changing careers, right? I was a contractor to begin with, and to go from being a contractor into financial services 30 years ago, I was walking away from a business that I had, but it just wasn't calling to me. It didn't bring me fulfillment. So I started all over again. That was a big risk.
Now, as part of that risk, you obviously have to have comfort in what you're doing. What was the comfort that when you made the leap to partners, what was that comfort?
That I took a really good look at what it was Vista at the time, which has become Partners. And I had looked at the profile, I met the board, and I was convinced that what they wanted to do, their mission of doubling assets in 5 to 7 years, I really thought it was doable. And I thought that I had some insight into how to do that. And I wanted to try. I was excited about their vision, that it was so clear, and that I could see opportunities to make that happen. And I had some skills and capabilities that complemented that vision. And I was like, let's try. It was exciting to me. I was drawn to it.
So I'm going to pick into something a little bit personal. So, ha ha ha. You have a love of horses. Tell me a little bit about horses and training and why you are involved with them. And sometimes to me, it feels like horses are a little bit of a metaphor for leadership. Is that true? Not? That was about 4 questions. I apologize.
Oh, I get to talk about my other passion. I love this. So, yes. So horses are a big time passion for me, but a new one, one that I went into about 10 years ago, and really at the invitation of my wife, who's a big horse person. She's the real talent in the family when it comes to equestrian sports. And it's not just leisure riding. It's actually competitive riding. And Jackie does dressage and I do a little bit of jumping. And we've had the good fortune to get started learning about horses and everything about them, and to the point where we've really gone off the deep end. And then we actually have a training facility that we've been building the last 6 years. So, and we're all in on this. But the connection between horses and people is amazing. And if you're around them long enough, it doesn't take long to imagine that there's a great metaphor between people leading people. If I'm a leader and there's 400 people, hey, they're a lot bigger and more powerful than me, but yet I need to communicate with them, have good communion with them if we're going to complete the mission. And so there's a lot of ways to communicate. You know, we talked about command and control being top down. Well, in the horse world, that might be a whip and spurs, right? I'm going to tell you what to do instead of invite and ask you what to do, which is the better way to ride to get full potential from you and your partnership with the horse. So there's the kind of connection that I see, and I think about it often, that, you know, horses are very sensitive too. You know, if you've ever watched one in a pasture, if a fly lands on it, you can see their muscles flex. You can probably even think about seeing that image. That's how sensitive they are. So even big organizations like Partners, you can be very subtle in your communication and very effective with the organization. It doesn't have to be big moves, big top-down kind of communications. There's a lot of different ways to do that. So I try to make that a study and a craft.
Okay. So what can you transfer from the leadership experience with the horses to the leadership experience with the people?
Well, you know, ask, don't tell, right? That crop is telling, you know, an artificial lead like that's a nice ask. So we can ask when we want to get things done and invite the organization to take on the mission. And if it's like what I like doing, going over jumps on a horse, the organization can clear amazing goals if asked correctly and trained correctly. You can do that. So I don't want to go too far into thinking that I think about people as animals, because I don't.
Right.
I just do see the metaphor, how beautiful it is when things are coordinated together and done thoughtfully. It's amazing what you can do. And I see that in the partnership in equestrian sports.
Well, and I guess the bigger point is many times you have to lean out of your space to find beautiful insights to bring back to your space. And clearly that's something that you were doing. So to kind of bring it back into the credit union space, tell me about what you're doing to help continue transformational leadership in credit unions. I mean, obviously you have done an amazing job with your own organization, but is there space or interest to bring it to kind of the rest of the fold? I know you teach a little bit on it. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, just that idea, too much is given, much is expected. So our credit union has flourished and done well with the work of everyone here. And so we feel a need to give back or just contribute and be a part of a community rather than be apart from it. And so that's what we're trying to do, is where we can, where we're invited, where we think we can help, is to kind of show up. And so if it's at data analytics conference, because we have a process that's underway here for about 4 years, there's a lot of learning that we can share. We do that. Or sharing our leadership program, we do that. I sit on the board of Western CUNA Management School and was a faculty member there, trying to give back what I think are my capabilities, strategy, and leadership. So yeah, just trying to find, you know, the right communities to where I can make a difference and show up. And, you know, the CEO Corner is a place that I created for that. It's a place to be enlightened and inspired about leadership. And I invite other folks there, other, you know, folks working in the C-suites or academics or coaches. And we share white papers and podcasts and all about the science and the art of leadership. And so that's one way we're trying to give back.
I noticed in your book, you said that the proceeds go to a scholarship. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah. So we're really proud. Our first year with the CEO Corner, we were able to break even and then provide money to the scholarship fund, or actually the general fund at Western CUNA Management School. And this year we'd like to do more. We'd like to provide more scholarships or coaching for folks who don't have a champion, someone who's not helping them kind of, you know, climb the leadership mountain.
Right. Well, yeah, it very much is. So let's talk about leadership in the credit union space kind of in wider terms. Right now, we have a huge opportunity in turnover. We know there are many CEOs who are either already retiring, point of retiring, going through the process of finding new leadership. What opportunities does that present? What does that present to the institution and present to the overall industry?
Yeah, well, to the institution, boy, I tell you, it's a call to all of us to make sure that we're thinking about bench strength, that our programs are building capabilities in our peoples to get ready to step up. And I think to step up in our organization is someplace else at another organization. I think that's just healthy and good for everybody to kind of have that very open dynamic to people's future. So I think that's important. You know, the industry, you know, there's always this idea that's out there of buy build, you know, do we go out and get somebody from outside the industry or someone inside? And I think it's going to be a combination of both. But hey, shame on us if we can't find it among our folks, talented people to step up. And I meet every day people who are amazingly talented. They just need someone to champion them, help them get the skills training that they need, but also the leadership training, because the work of leadership really is, you know, it's this art and craft science thing, and the more time you have to prepare to get ready for it, the better you'll do in your role. You know, Bain just put out an interesting piece of research looking at CEOs who do really well, and they had them reflect on their experiences, saying, "What do you wish you knew more of before you got to the corner office?" And it was not technical skills; it was actually, I could have prepared myself better in things like communication, leadership, decision making, strategy. I wish I had worked harder on myself. So that's a great kind of piece of research to think about as we're thinking about getting people ready to contribute more.
Okay, so let's go and put kind of the shoe on the other foot. And I am somebody who is in a leadership team where my senior leader is leaving, and I now have a new leader. What can I do to help myself enjoy the new leader, transition into the new leader, and transform as I go through it? Because it will be change.
You know what? If you have an honest picture of your own capabilities and what the organization is doing, boy, if I'm a leader coming in and you can sit down and say, hey, here's how I understand the mission. Here's where I think we're going to have some challenges and felt difficulties or opportunities. Here's my skill set and capabilities. I have some insight and ideas about how I can help in this certain area. I'd love to try. And that's not necessarily asking for promotion. It's just saying, I'm here to help. I'm here to serve. And, you know, usually if you can contribute more, you get more, is something that we talk out here. So yeah, present yourself, show how you can help, and take some risk in that. I know that takes a little bit of courage to do that, but I guarantee you, being a leader for a number of years, I love it when somebody can come in and say, wow, you have a different vantage point about the mission, where the opportunities and maybe problems are, and you're problem solving and you want to contribute, man, I'll take more of that, please. That's great.
No doubt. That is, well, and the fact that people can be honest with their own assessment of their strengths and their weaknesses. And I think that's really the starting point, is to say, hey, this is what I do really well, and this is the area I've got to improve. And a lot of times that's hard. That's a very hard look to take.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you do your own self-assessment, and it can help, too, if you get others to weigh in, too. You know, you've probably done that in your career. You know, how do you see me? You know, what do you see are my gifts, and what are the areas where I have some growing edges? And I like to say, what are the areas I need to take to the gym, right? It's not that I'm a fail. You know? It's like, hey, if you can work on that a little bit, bulk up on that one, buddy. You know, it's like, okay, got it. I can do that.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the importance of change, transformational change, and in the environment that we're in right now. So, you know, like you said, disruption. There are 6,000 fintech, basically, disruptors out there, and there are less than 6,000 credit unions. So if you want to think, there's one disruptor for one credit union in the marketplace. And what's really interesting about these disruptors is they're all going for little profitable pieces. They're not trying to say, I'm a credit union or I'm a bank. They're just saying, you know what, I can do person-to-person payments better, or I can do savings better, or I can do these really important pieces. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your thoughts on how important is it to be able to continue this transformation and embrace change and move on. I mean, this is a very kind of, if you are somebody who's been complacent, and there are many fabulous people in the credit union space, but many of them have been doing the same thing for years over years, and now they're having to embrace change, whether they like it or not. What can transformation leadership help them? What advice can you give? What thoughts would you have to that?
Well, you know, I think it's just a recognition, and I think everybody understands that things are changing for all the things that you have just said there. And so some of the things that are most prized in the future are going to be agility, innovation. And we probably know either explicitly or kind of implied that we don't have all the capabilities inside the organization. And so that's really reshaping what a CEO's job is. Your job now is about creating ecosystems of people that work in very effectively together, and that you're bringing together resources, people's partnerships, many of them outside the organization, to get the mission done. And don't be surprised that you bring a group of people together, you work intensely together to make something happen, then 9 months later, it's done, and now you're reorganizing against another mission, that it's going to be much more fluid. You've used that word, and I think it describes well what the business environment is. And so it's a different feeling about risk. You know, before we thought about risk against capital and charge-offs, and now it's against forming work groups and ecosystems. And this is some of the new assets that we're managing now. Very different.
So when you're thinking about, you know, basically an ecosystem that you would create, and it's both internal and external, and let's give our audience a little kind of shape on that. It's sort of thinking about, hey, you've been leading, you know, Earth for a long time, and Earth is wonderful and comfortable, and you realize you've got to bring in Mars, and you've got to bring in Jupiter, and you've got to bring in a couple, and of course you've got to make sure you've got the sun part of your new strength, because everybody's going to bring in resources that you didn't have. That's a whole different set of problems as well as opportunities, and that's what you mean when you're talking about an internal and external ecosystem.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And we're feeling that. That's really changed my role. You know, and on the first part of my journal, inside of it are the name of the top five technology companies that I need to partner with. And I have the cell phone on speed dial for every one of their CEOs to talk to and partner with. And more, just more proactive than just calling them when we have a problem, is we get together every 6 months and talk about, how are we working together? What can I do better? What can you do better? In addition to that, where's your roadmap going? What do you see? Where do I think I'm going? Where there's a good nexus there. I can tell you, I did not manage vendor relationships like that 10 years ago. Hmm. You know, they're much more fluid and much more dynamic now. And I need to have my eye on where your roadmap is going, because I may be going in another direction. So I need to know that early.
If I'm hearing you correctly, one of the neat opportunities you're pointing out is, we don't need to know, we as a leader of an organization do not need to know everything. We need to know how we can make ourselves better through the sum of everybody.
I love that. That's absolutely right. We don't have the answers. We just need to know how to ask the right questions now.
And keep asking them, and be prepared to fail in those awkward positions. And I think the other part I'm hearing you is, it's okay to be vulnerable. I don't know this, so let's go find out. And it's okay that I don't know this. In fact, it's good I don't know this.
no, you know, and that we just have to get our shoulders down about that. It is no big deal, right? That we don't know something. And there's more stuff I don't know than I do know. And I'm okay with that. Get comfortable with that. That's our new normal. It's okay.
It is, but it's very uncomfortable for anybody who's been in that former, you know, servant role where I am the one who knows it all and you come to me because I have all the answers. And all of a sudden someday I'll say to you, I don't have the answer, but let's go figure it out together. Wow. Whoa. Some minds might get a little blown with that.
Yeah, that reminds me of that old spiritual. It's not my brother nor my sister in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you think about our industry, the credit union industry, that is exactly where we're sitting. And that is, how do I get comfortable being uncomfortable?
Yeah. Well, go look for partners who will make you uncomfortable. You know, your company is a great one, Thrive. You know, you and I have talked a little bit. You've challenged me to rethink about how we're viewing what we think we know about our members, as an example, just one, and you're helping us with that. So yeah, that's one of the things partnerships can do.
Right.
Find people to help shake it up.
So let's pretend, and there's of course total tongue in cheek here, but now you've got a magic wand, like Mickey's magic wand. And now you could change one thing in the credit union space. And there's lots you could change, but what if you could only change one thing? And what would that be?
Wow. So, you know, for me, it would be take more risk. Right. Whatever that means to you, whatever you think risky is, just go lean into that. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You know, and that's going to vary from organization to organization, but take more risk.
But what if I fail? John, what if I fail? What if my board tells me I failed? What do I do?
Well, you know, I think talk with your board about the need for change and how we're going to go find out about something rather than waiting. Man, and there's some wonderful research out there now that says, I think it's McKinsey put this research out, that it used to be that you could be a fast follower and your market share was still pretty decent. Their new market research is showing that first mover is taking tons of market share and fast follower, not so much. So the new environment is you can't hang back and wait. So have a conversation with your board saying, we need to become more agile. We need to go find out. We need to lean into ambiguity, which means we're going to go a little bit sooner than we have in the past. And we're going to be on this learning curve. We're going to fail forward, what some people say. And I know it's a little scary, but the cost of hanging back and waiting is just way too high.
Agreed. And I mean, of course, it's always my area to preach, but I think we are an incredible option, an incredibly needed financial alternative. And it would be very sad that our fear of failure would keep us back from thriving.
You know, the leader of our organization here, the Walt Disney Company, Bob Iger, his saying is the riskiest thing you can do is to not take risk. That's the culture. Yeah.
Well, exactly. So in your experience with that culture that you have, would you say the culture is also unique compared to other credit union, you know, experiences that you've had?
You know what? When I get close to some other organizations, there's some wonderful credit unions who are very innovative and are taking risk. And I really try to learn from them. But I would say on the whole, our industry is conservative, and banking is conservative, right? Insurance is conservative, you know, so it's time for us to, you know, think about that business model. Is it going to serve us well going forward? And the answer is no. And take more risk. Get going is my message. Get going. Take more risk. Start leaning into this. Get forward. Let's go.
I like that. I think I almost heard the crop snap on that one, didn't I? Get going. I guess the kind of the takeaways, if I were to summarize kind of our conversation, is that transformational leadership is a beautiful place because it will help you take the strengths that you have currently and move them forward and make you even stronger and probably take you to places you didn't know you could take, kind of would be number one.
I like that capstone. That's
cool.
Good.
Number two then would be, it's the people though. The people are going to have to be part of this. They're going to have to be get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's part of change. And that is a very difficult part. That's a very difficult thing to do. And obviously transformational leadership will help you do that, correct?
I think it will. Yeah. And I think transformational leadership is what works now in this new environment and what's being asked of organizations to do. So that's why transformational leadership. And the research is pretty clear. This higher level of engagement, more dynamic leadership, thoughtful leadership, intentional leadership against what we're facing is what's going to win.
And then it sounds like there's kind of two other ones. One is it is okay to fail. It's absolutely okay to fail. And if you're not failing, you're probably not pushing yourself hard enough.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, we talk about here, take more risk, but smartly. So it isn't as though we're throwing caution to the wind. We're not going to use all the science and disciplines that we have at our disposal to use. So we'll take more risks, but smartly. Absolutely.
And then the last takeaway, which I think is kind of where we actually started, is at the end of the day, you spend most of your life working, good or bad, but that's kind of what you do. So you might as well have a really good why you do this, going back to the mission. And if your mission every day is to make a difference or whatever your mission may be, that's got to be what motivates you, and that's got to be what's going to continue to take you. And if you don't have a mission for what you're doing or a why or whatever your je is, then you need to think about that.
I think so. I think that's why I left construction to move into this business. I'm the luckiest guy on the planet, Anne. I really do. I get to leave this playground and go to another playground and then another playground. I mean, I'm really fortunate.
Okay, but what do you do on the playground? Is it the slide or is it the swings or is it the jungle gym?
I'm jumping off the swing. You know me, I like jumping.
I don't have to land on my feet. That's not necessarily an option.
I'm smart enough to know don't jump into concrete, jump into soft sand.
Oh, John, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much. It's been such a joy to hear about where you're going, what you've done. I'm really excited to see what you will continue to do. This is fantastic. And I just really hope that many people will reach out to you and ask you more questions about what you're doing, because we need transformation, obviously, in our space. And this sounds fantastic. So thank you.
Hey, thank you. I've enjoyed the dialogue and look forward to our continuing friendship.
Fantastic. Me too. Yes.
Okay.
Good. All right. Take care. Thank you.
Ciao for now.
Join big and on approach June 11th through 14th in Minneapolis, Minnesota for the 2017 AXFI conference. For more information, including our speaker lineup, visit www.axficonference.com. Use promo code BIGCAST